So we have an hour together for our heart to heart, and I believe we're in around about week six of the program of the Essence course. And I think we're just up to the stage where we're introducing the Satipatthana Sutta, the four foundations of mindfulness. So I thought we could begin by saying a few words about the Satipatthana Sutta and the importance of that sutra. But first of all, it would be lovely just to begin with a few moments of practice, just as a way to kind of settle. Okay. So just taking a moment to bring the awareness out of the head and into the body, bringing the mind and the body together. And really just coming into the lived experience of the body, knowing the body as we're sitting. And then just simply being. If you'd like to, you might want to take a couple of deep breaths in and then releasing any tension, feeling a quality of relaxation with the out-breath. Doing that for a few times. Even closing the eyes if that feels beneficial. And then taking a moment to connect with your motivation for joining the Abhidharma course. Or even your greater motivation for practicing the path altogether. And then contemplating that each and every being, human or otherwise, wishes to be happy and free from suffering. To find an inner lasting sense of ease, feeling of wholeness, completeness. And then generating a quality or a sense of appreciation for the path, for these teachings, for the Buddha, who showed the path to enlightenment, complete freedom from suffering, and the Sangha, the companions on the path. Bringing to mind your teachers, those who inspire you and show you the way. The way home to your true nature, your Buddha nature. And then letting all of that contemplation fall away, and once again, just simply being as you are, undistracted. Okay. So I hope you can hear me okay. I've got the volume on full. I can't turn it up anymore. But just start waving. If my voice goes too soft, just let me know and I'll try and speak up a bit louder. I do have a soft voice. Excuse me. Yeah, so I hope you're as excited about this Abhidharma course as I am. I have to say, I'm really, really enjoying it. It just feels such a rich exploration, particularly, I think many of our older sanghas are so familiar with the Mahamudra view and the path of liberation teachings or the joy of living with this really expansive Mahamudra view. And it just feels so rich to be going sort of into the car engine and really seeing all of the different pieces of what's really going on in our experience. And it just feels like a very rich exploration. So I hope you're enjoying it. I'm sure you are. And we're very lucky to have Edwin, right? He's such an expert on the Abhidharma. I'm quite sort of whoof. Edwin's here answering all of those tricky technical questions, or really giving beautiful, very clear, succinct answers to the questions that are coming up in the forums and in these live sessions as well. So very grateful for him and his years of practice and study. So I thought it would be quite nice to just begin with a few words about the four foundations of mindfulness, which, as I said at the beginning, I think is pretty much to where we've gotten up to. And in fact, I'm at Thergot Osling Monastery now in Kathmandu, and we're going through the Institute Foundation Program. And so for the last 3 weeks, I've been receiving teachings from the Lopon here. Particularly on the Abhidharma. We begin with the Abhidharma and then go into Lojong Madhyamika and then the Vajrayana. And so we're really in the Abhidharma section of the course. And I asked the Lopon today, like, where does the Satipatthana fit into the Abhidharma? What role does it really play? And his answer was very succinct and very clear. He said it's absolutely, and this is his expertise. He at the monastery, he teaches Abhidharma to all of the monks that go through the Shedra. So he's got the Abhidharma hat on, just to know that that's his thing, that's his forte. And he said the Abhidharma is 100%, and the Satipatthana Sutta is 100% critical for attaining awakening. It's absolutely paramount. We cannot avoid it. It's absolutely needed, 100%, the four foundations of mindfulness. And it was so beautiful to hear him say that. I've already read this in the books, and we're doing the practices going through the course, but the way that he expressed it, it really did make sense to me that we cannot jump past these foundational teachings. We say foundational as if they're basic, as if they're simple, but they're absolutely not. They're 100% critical. So with that said, I hope I can do justice to this just by sharing a few words about it. So the Satipatthana Sutta, I think some of you will already know this. It was a discourse, an actual oral teaching given by the Buddha himself. And it offers what's so wonderful about it is it offers a very, very precise framework for understanding and transforming the mind. And so the key principle of the Buddhist teachings is to go beyond suffering altogether. So the term sutra, or in Sanskrit, or sutta in Pali, as I said, is really referring to the Buddha's actual teachings. And as we might already know, these teachings were often given as oral recitations. And so traditionally, these teachings were memorized and they were passed down through generations before being written down. And it's quite interesting, this tradition of memorization, it still exists now in many parts of India. When I first came to Tenzin Palmer's nunnery in 2005, I was trying to teach the cook there how to make bread. And I couldn't write Hindi, but actually it wouldn't have even have been any use if I could have written Hindi. I don't think she could actually read Hindi. What I ended up doing was sort of doing some almost caveman style illustrations showing her what sort of proportions she needed to make the bread and the whole process of making bread. But what flabbergasted me was I made these very simple drawings, but once she'd read them, once she'd looked at them and kind of understood what to do, she never looked at it ever again. It was almost as if once she'd received the teaching sort of through pictorial form, but once she'd received it, it had gone into her memory and she'd actually kind of, it was there, you know? I mean, for me, I have to get everything out or look up on Google. My memory is absolutely terrible. But certainly in India at the time of the Buddha, everything was given as an oral teaching and it was memorized in a way that was very, very beautiful. Often these teachings were told in stories that people would very easily remember, a very theatrical way of explaining stories. So lots of very clever ways of taking these practices and teachings into our memory. So it was years after the time of the Buddha that these were written down and became part of the early Buddhist canon. And so these teachings are really what we're exploring here is sort of the direct and very profound method for stabilizing the mind. So we talked about that in my last Heart to Heart, talked about the qualities of shamatha. And at the same time, the Satipatthana is all about cultivating insight or vipassana. So it's got this intention of really guiding practitioners to complete liberation, this one sutta, all the way to complete liberation. So it really has a strong emphasis on this practice of mindfulness. So this is really our innate capacity to attend to the contents of our experience as they arise, moment by moment, with incredible precision, incredible accuracy, to see really what exactly is going on in our experience. And so this is really an essential part of meditation. We're intentionally cultivating awareness, this present moment awareness. And so it's really this key element that transforms any activity into a meditation practice. Without this quality of mindfulness or awareness that Rinpoche often uses, meditation, of course, is impossible. And we often hear, which is quite strange, we often hear of mindfulness as being almost like a standalone kind of practice. But in Buddhism, that's kind of laughable, really. You know, without mindfulness, there is no meditation. There is no standalone mindfulness. It's an aspect of any practice. So we need mindfulness if we're reciting a mantra, if we're doing a visualization, even if we're just resting in awareness itself, we need this quality of mindfulness. And so the Buddha emphasized in the Satipatthana how these qualities of awareness, of samadhi, can be cultivated. And the ultimate goal, as I've already said, is complete liberation. And so it's very much a systematic training that goes through, that cultivates concentration and stabilizes the mind. And at the same time, we start to look into our experience to really understand reality as it is. And so this is the Vipassana or insight. And so this is the framework that we're really working with. One thing that I found quite interesting when the Lopam was talking about developing this quality of samadhi that's described in the Satipatthana Sutta, he said that for practitioners in our modern day, it's really highly unlikely that we can develop such a strong level of concentration. And he talked about, which was quite interesting because he's a monk living here in the monastery, he's not really traveling out in the world. But he said something which really caught my attention. He said that, you know, we are so, our systems are so overwhelmed by how many sensual desires are available. You know, as soon as we've got our phone, within 6 months it's outdated, or a year it's outdated, and we might want the next one. You know, gadgets that are being invented left, right, and center with this incredible explosion in technology, in AI, in everything that's changing so quickly. All of this has a very agitating effect on the mind. It really stops the mind from being able to calm and to settle. We're just constantly getting stimulated, constantly bombarded. And I can see that that's definitely very true. This quality of wanting, this quality of something missing, but even just the excitement of something new, something fresh, something better, something that's going to help you in some way increase your efficiency, or, you know, all of this. So all of this really does sort of impact our ability to just rest the mind. So as we go through the four foundations of mindfulness, and I won't go into them in much detail because they are presented in the course, but just to very quickly touch on them, we have the mindfulness of the body. So obviously this physical form. We have mindfulness of feelings, and this is probably of the four foundations of mindfulness, this is one that people often find quite tricky. And I can see already over the last week or so, there's been a few comments in the forum about the mindfulness of feelings. The word feelings can be very, very, what's the word, confusing. You know, when we as Westerners think of feelings, we're often talking about our emotions, the way that we feel about something, our emotional inner landscape towards something. And so in the Satipatthana Sutta, we're not talking about our emotions, but we're not purely talking about our physical feelings or sensations either. And this is where I find it a little bit tricky when I was learning about this. It's like, well, what are we talking about? Is it emotions, or is it physical feelings, physical sensations? And in truth, both of these come into this experience, but this is neither of them are what we're actually talking about here. So we have our emotional responses to things. We have our sensations, our physical sensations in response to things. But the feelings that we're referring to here are, I like to use the word feeling tone, or the affective tone. So here we're talking about the three experiences of pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. And I'm sure you'll remember Mingyur Rinpoche's wonderful example of this, the feeling of going to the gym, for those of you that still go to a gym, or going to your nearby sports club, if that's the word you use, sports club. So imagine that you're going off to have some time in the sauna, and it's summertime, and you're looking for a parking spot, you know, and you can't find your parking spot, and you're driving all around the car park trying to find a place to park. And you can't find a place near to the door, so you've got quite a long way to walk from your car to the gym. And so you're really not in a good mood. Your feeling tone is quite unpleasant. And then as soon as you get into the sauna, you strip off, you get into the sauna, you're intentionally sitting there sweating away, but your feeling tone now is quite pleasant. It's an enjoyable experience. So you've moved from a physical sensation of heat, looking as you're driving, as you're going from your car to the door. You've still got the same experience of exercise or heat when you get into the sauna, but one has a pleasant feeling tone and one has an unpleasant feeling tone. So it's in response both to physical sensations as well as what's going on in the mind. So I hope that kind of makes sense for you. It's really our response to what is arising. So sensations naturally arise. We naturally have the reactions of sensations all the time in the body, but it's really how we're responding to those as pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. So after the four foundations of feeling, so the body, the feeling, then we have the mindfulness of the mind, and then lastly, mindfulness of phenomena. And so these four, body, feeling, mind, and phenomena, address the full spectrum of our experience, the full spectrum. So there's really nothing outside of these. And have you seen, has Rinpoche Rinpoche's teachings on the mind and phenomena become available yet? Are you able to watch those teachings yet? No. Just the body and feelings. Yeah, just body. Okay, good. So we'll stick with just the body and feelings, I think, today. We don't want to get ahead of Rinpoche. But yeah, I think that was pretty much really all that I wanted to share for now. It would be good maybe to just open it up for questions or comments, and yeah, anything that you are excited about or anything that you'd like to share about the material in the course so far. I hope I haven't confused you by talking about mindfulness of feeling. Marilyn, yes, please. Hi, Marilyn.
Hi, I just wanted to thank you for that clarification because though my group is still on the phenomena of the body, I did have that when I was trying to explain feeling, I was immediately confused about what it is, and you made it very clear, so thank you very much.
Oh, good. Thank you. Thank you, Marilyn. Yeah. I was wondering if I can say anything more about feeling. When the Lopon recently taught feelings, he said that there's actually five. We can break this down into five parts of experience. So there's pleasant physical sensations, there's unpleasant physical sensations, there's pleasant mental sensations, unpleasant mental sensations, and neutral. But it's this feeling tone, the affective tone that's kind of in a reaction to some kind of stimulus, a reaction to something that's going on in our experience. And so this is obviously employing the physical sensations, which are related to the five sense consciousnesses, as well as the mental sensations or the feelings that accompany the mental consciousness. So it's really, again, it's using the entirety of our experience. And so any of these experiences, pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral, can arise at any time. And those experiences are created by the mind. Yeah, Pa.
Thank you, Kunsa. As always, very clear. excuse me, I also have a little throat. One thing that you said earlier about the people get the latest iPhone, and then as soon as it's a year old, you want something new, etc. So I had a reflection this morning that impermanence is speeding up. Everything is permanent, shorter and shorter and shorter. So the question is that just my mind, or is it reality that everything is compressing and speeding up. We can see, that the Neanderthal man made a flint axe lasted maybe his lifetime. Today he'll go through 50 axes.
Yeah.
So I'm just curious about if everybody feels the same thing, that everything is compressing.
Yeah, that's an interesting. I have actually heard someone explain or express a theory that time is actually speeding up. I
Yeah.
haven't heard that theory. I wouldn't be able to repeat it, but
It's okay.
it was very interesting. Yeah.
The other thing that I also thought about, you mentioned about the Indian ability to remember teachings, to put it into my, I you know, it's all through my life, I had very had always had difficulties in studying, doing my homework or whatever, but I still seem to remember things. So maybe I was Indian in past life. I don't
Very good. That's wonderful. That's
know.
wonderful.
All right, thank you.
Lisa, would you like to come on? Hey.
There we go. Always takes a while to figure out which button do I need to press and get everything popping up. So it is interesting going through these teachings. Thank you so much for helping us with this course. And yes, your insights are always so wonderful, very precise. As I'm going through this, when I look at the body and I can see, oh yes, that's pleasant. Oh yes, it's unpleasant. And they don't stay. The feelings are very transitory. So I know, okay, yes, this is impermanent. Things are changing. This is good. I want to make sure with this that I understand that this is a relative practice. Now, I kind of am wondering, okay, then when we recognize impermanence and we rest there, then we're resting in the Alaya. But the Alaya has the two forms of Alaya, which one is confused and one is this beautiful open spaciousness. I'm forming a question here. How do I prevent from going into this grasping, like, oh yeah, now I got this. Woohoo, there I go. I've got this experience. How do I remain fresh and open and keep it that way so that I can stay within both the relative and the absolute reality? It just seems like we're playing on this fine edge of, oh, I almost got it, but I can't grasp it. Can you please speak to that? I hope I framed that well.
Yeah, I think, I mean, a practice that we'll go into more when we go into the immersion course will really dig into Rinpoche's practices that come from his Gomrim, the Stainless Prajna Manual. And there will be practices in there where we investigate selflessness and emptiness. And
Okay.
it's quite beautiful to see or to understand here what the view is in these Abhidharma teachings. So the ultimate, gosh, I've got a request about starting meeting questions. Oh, sorry. Yeah, so when we're talking about the view of the relative and the view of the ultimate, the relative view is anything that comes together through pieces, through parts, anything that is compounded. And then when we talk about the ultimate, what we're talking about is anything that cannot be broken down any further. So actually the Lopon did a beautiful example. He had a piece of chocolate. And he was breaking down the chocolate into smaller and smaller and smaller pieces until the only thing that was left was a tiny, tiny smidge, a smear of chocolate on his hand. And he said, if you keep breaking that down further and further and further, the ultimate is when you find that peace that just cannot be broken down any further. According to the Vaibhashika view, the Abhidharma view that we're looking into here, that is the ultimate, when we find that peace that can be broken, cannot be broken down any further. And so anything that comes together through anything that comes together through pieces is what we're looking at here in the relative. So when we're exploring the body, for example, or feelings, for example, we're looking at all of the different pieces that make up this experience of the body. And so what we're seeing is that ultimately, a truly existing, solid, on its own, individual, unchanging, permanent self doesn't exist. But what does exist on the relative level is this impermanent body that is made up of elements, that is coming together through causes and conditions, you know, all of the multiple pieces that come together and make up this body. This is really what we're exploring here, certainly in the Gom Rim. And so when we explore that further and further and further, we can have the experience of non-self or the experience of emptiness. We can talk about three characteristics: impermanent, non-self, or dukkha. And when we talk about the non-self, sometimes that also includes emptiness. So emptiness and non-self are sometimes presented together here. But that's really the practices that we'll go into in much greater depth in the immersion course. I think you'll really enjoy that exploration. Yeah, there's some beautiful practices there. Yeah.
Thank you. That was very well said. Thank you.
Ricardo.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much for your time. I'll try to be clear because these are things I feel and I think about, but I'm trying to choose my words. So, yes, when I observe, I'm aware of the body. Yes, I realize that things are shifting mostly because my mind is not quiet. But it's not like a complete change all the time. There's some things that are stable, like saying like a river flowing. It's not everything changes all the time. For instance, the sensation of my hips against the cushion. My mind goes away, but when I go back there, they're still there. They just don't disappear. So there's a relative stability. Then I try to analyze that. Yes, it's made of parts. And I when I go really subtle, parts are vibrating, but from a distance, from a certain point of view, if not, I'm not too close, I'm not too far, that's relatively stable. And I wonder why. I mean, is that karma? Is something, a habit of my mind that's used to build my hips that way? That's one question. The other one is, pain is not, I cannot deconstruct pain. When after 40 minutes, my knees start hurting, they hurt. There's no way I can, pleasure, neutral. I can doubt, is this neutral? Is this pleasurable? I don't know. Do I like this? No, that's feelings. I mean, when I really don't like something, there's no way to deconstruct it. I mean, it's really, my body saying no way. I mean, I can pretend I'm okay. I feel it. It's not. So these are my two questions. Are stable things habits? And what about pain and suffering?
I'll speak to the second question first, because I think that's the most simple. I think you kind of answered the question as you were sharing. Sorry, keep moving. There you are. You kind of answered the question as you were sharing, because you said that as soon as my mind thinks no way, you know, you cannot deconstruct it anymore. The mind has said, cannot do this, stop. And that really is where the suffering is arising. That's where the suffering is coming from. We always come back to the main sources of our sufferings being ignorance. And from ignorance, we have aversion and craving. And so what you're experiencing there is strong aversion to the experience, to the physical experience. And that's where we've now, like, there's nowhere to move. There's no wiggle room. You're absolutely stuck. So I would say that, when pain is so overwhelming, or when sensations are so overwhelming and we can't be with them, it's not really healthy to stay in that stuck place. It doesn't really serve us much at all. But if we can rewind a little bit, go back a little bit, and start to explore the experience, and again, there are some really beautiful practices in the Stainless Prajna by Mingu Rinpoche, which we'll go into in the immersion course, which really offer a fresh lens as a way of experiencing what is going on in the body. So we've spoken a lot about how Abhidharma is going down to the granular of our experience. And so to just give an example of that, like with the experience of pain, we start to look at the four elements in the body. So the earth element, and we can think of the earth element as where things are really hard. You know, if you were to scan the awareness through the body, and you go into the shoulder blades, you know, like where your back can get really tight, that tight hardness, that would be like the earth element. It could feel pressure. It could feel heaviness. And so if you're kind of looking at these practices and exploring the body through the lens of the elements, it's really quite exciting. Okay. We don't kind of get to this, I can't take it anymore. I can't take it anymore has made it into a solid thing that's unworkable. But coming back a little bit more, we can look at these different elements, and we can see, as I said, the earth, the water, the wind, and the fire. And we can even see the sort of secondary elements that arise. So the feeling of smoothness, of suppleness, of lightness, of heaviness, the feeling of thirst or hunger. You know, all of these experiences. So they're quite beautiful practices that really help us to inquire into our experience. And then if something really becomes solid and workable, we can just stop the practice and move. You know, I mean, that's okay. The kind, wise, and sensible thing to do.
So if I get it right, there are means to explore this.
Yes.
I don't have them yet, but there are means.
Okay. Yeah, it definitely means. And, pain is something that human beings, all beings, not just human, you know, we'll all experience death. Hopefully we'll get to experience old age. if we experience death, we'll definitely have some sickness there, you know, even if we don't get to old age. So I think anything that is part of the human experience in this way, the Buddha for sure will have come up with some practices to work with it.
Okay.
But it's interesting because you can break it down to what is happening in the body and what is happening in the mind. And it's really often what is happening with the mind that is really what we need to address. And these are very skillful ways of employing that and getting slowly, gradually towards that. And then you talked about like this feeling of continuity.
Yeah, and I wonder if that is my mind that's used to building it in the same place.
Being in the same place.
No, building it. I mean, if I'm very close, I can see it. If I'm very far, okay, I can see it. But at the right distance, I don't know how to say it. My body feelings, my hand, if I look at it, it's there. And if I try to feel it, there are sensations that are not together. Mm-hmm. A part of me says, don't kid yourself. You know your mind, your hand is there. I mean, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's a thought. So
yes.
I wonder, why do things seem stable?
Yes, yes.
That's my question.
Why do things seem stable? I think, you know, from the Abhidharma Kosha, we talk about the previous mind movement. So everything is arising because of a previous moment.
Okay.
And so one moment is going into the next, into the next, into the next. And so I think the Abhidharma will definitely help you to explore this continuation of experience, and it will really break down like what is actually going on in that experience.
Okay, I think I get it. Yeah. So
Yeah.
a thought, the cause of a thought is a previous thought. The cause of experience is previous experience. So there's the continuity, not in the object, but in the
Yes,
mind.
in
Okay.
the mind
I can see that. Yeah.
yeah, and the body, the mind and the body.
Yeah.
What was I going to say? Yeah, I think you'll find it quite interesting when we go into the five aggregates and we start to break down form, feeling, consciousness. And so we'll start to break down all of the different aspects of our experience. Because I think from what you shared, it's you're seeing all of the different pieces, but
Yeah.
it's so skillful the way that the Buddhist teachings actually offer these clear structures, the four foundations of mindfulness, the five aggregates. And so you'll be able to actually dissect it and see what is really going on.
Okay. Thank
Yeah. If I didn't answer your question, maybe you can try and
you.
pop
You did.
it in
You
the
did
chat.
it perfectly well. Thank you.
Okay, good. Pam, would you like to share your or come on?
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Khunsen Palmo. I have a couple of questions, and both are fairly simple, I think, or maybe not, but we'll see. We'll explore. The first question is going back to tone. So I'm trying to understand the nuance there. So the example you gave, which was a very good example of it's a hot day, I'm in my car, I'm hot and sweaty, the experience is unpleasant. I go into the gym, I go into a sauna where I'm also hot and sweaty, but that's pleasant. So the same feeling of temperature, meaning hot and sweaty, can be both pleasant and unpleasant given the mind's perception of that temperature. So I kind of understood that, but when you say in mindfulness of feeling, you're not talking about emotions or emotional responses or physical sensations. That's the part where I don't understand that. It's like you are talking about physical sensation, hot. That's a physical sensation. You're going one step further, of course, by saying, okay, this physical sensation, the nuance, is it pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral? Am I getting that right?
Yes, totally, totally. So we're not stopping at just the physical sensation, and we're not stopping
Say
at
hot.
just the mood or the emotion.
Yes.
It's how we react to that, the pleasant, the unpleasant, or the neutral in response to or in reaction to. So you what you described that you've understood it correctly. None of these things are in isolation. We can't just have these feeling tones that we have are so they're so difficult to see. They are so subtle. We know when we really, really don't like something, but this
Yes.
feeling tone of unpleasant is very difficult to catch.
Yes.
You go from being something a little bit, couldn't quite get my parking spot. Ah, it's too hot, it's too sticky. It's just unpleasant. You don't even notice any of that. And then you go into
Yes.
the corner and it's like, oh, this is beautiful, this is nice, but you don't, yeah. So I think
You don't even know why. Yeah. So it's training the mind to go one step further to
one step
identify.
further and
Yeah.
seeing something that is really quite subtle and nearly always there.
Yes.
Even now as I'm talking, I can feel these feeling tones in my body, Just it's
Yes.
fascinating to discover this as you go through life moment by moment in daily life. It's fascinating to discover. Yeah.
And then,
We're so in the gross. We're so in the gross.
yes, exactly.
Yeah.
And then I've also in meditation, this is not my second question, by the way, it's just a continuation of this question. if I'm sitting on the cushion or not sitting on the cushion, and I could be driving a car for that matter, and an emotion arises, let's say an afflictive emotion, like feeling a tightening because I'm thinking of someone who annoys me. Okay, so there's both the thinking of the person, that concept, as well as a physical response, which is tightening in the body. And what I've noticed is when I look at that and I say to myself something like, that's okay, I will have this tightening, this unpleasant emotion. I don't say unpleasant, but I know it's unpleasant emotion. And I will let it stay here till the end of time. I found it evaporate, so it will dissolve on its own. So it self-liberates, goes away. Then I've had this experience, which is interesting. I was in a very, very bad car accident in March, and I have soft tissue injuries on my right side. And like right now, I'm having a flare-up, and the flare-up is so intense, and it really hurts. So it's unpleasant. Now, I'm having a hard time because I think what's happening is I can claim that it's unpleasant, but I have a very subtle expectation that it's going to self-liberate. And it's like, why aren't you self-liberating and going away? So there's a question behind all of this is, how do I sit with something which may last till the end of time, or at least my end of time in this lifetime, and be okay with it when it's so intensely painful? So any hints around that?
I think that the fact that you're noticing the feeling tone, and the example that you gave of having a feeling of aversion coming up as you're driving, you know, just as soon as you're aware of that, you're already, that's really the practice. So we're really learning not to have aversion, not the two breaks of aversion and craving. We're learning to take the feet off altogether and just be. And likewise with the pain in the strong pain in the neck, I wonder if the pain that you're experiencing, is it a consistent pain that is the same, or is
no.
the pain in some way changing, you know, so
it's always changing. It'll lessen, it'll get bigger, it will be in one spot, it'll go to slightly a different spot. So if I really study it, it is shifting and changing, but it's fairly persistently present. So if I try to turn my neck fully, I can't turn it all the way. That's persistent, but it is changing. It is not solid. It's not, you know, permanent in that respect.
Yeah. So in that way, we can always apply the teachings of Vipassana. We can always see the nature of our experience. And that nature, as you said, it's changing. Moment by moment, it's changing. You know, even I've got the blur on, you know, even my iPod case, this moment by moment is changing. It's not
getting older, it's disintegrating. You can't see it because it's so slow, but it's happening.
Exactly. So as we go through these practices, this is really what we're learning to see. And even if what you're seeing is this faint, subtle wish that pain will dissolve, seeing that arise and pass. So I think it must be an overwhelming experience to have something that is so strong and so painful, but the practice, you can always find the truth in that. You can always find the truth that it's coming together. It's a compounded phenomena. One of the main pieces that we'll go into in this exploration is the suffering of the body. This body that's made up of the elements by nature is suffering. Even the breath is said to be suffering because it's coming together of compounded parts. And by nature, all compounded phenomena are suffering. So, I mean, in some way, you've got a wonderful example of that. You know, the body is suffering. One of the students here at the institute was, yeah, she had strong period pain, and she said, you know, can I miss the meditation today? And I said, but we're doing suffering. It would be brilliant if you feel well enough. Come lie down. Don't have to sit up. Lie down, and be with the pain. And she gave me this huge hug and said, you know, all my life I've been running away from this pain, pushing away this pain, pushing away this suffering. And now I've got the courage to just sit and be with it. And she said after the practice, it totally transformed. She said the physical pain was there, but the mental pain had gone, the mental suffering had gone. And that's really what we're trying to get to here, that added suffering that we can very easily start to work with. Yeah, well, I say very easily. I mean, on the scale of things, you know, it's that's where we can work rather than this. Who knows? Who knows?
Wonderful.
But the mental, yeah.
Yeah, that's very, very helpful in terms of the practice is changing your relationship to whatever you're experiencing. So it is not that the pain will go away, but my relationship to the pain is different. Yes. So the mental pain is gone. So I just have to be with the physical pain, which is suffering of suffering. It's there. It's part of who we are in this life. Yes. So, okay. I think that's great. Thank you very much. And then I'll come off. I'll put myself on mute, but I didn't understand when you said the Lopan said you can break chocolate into a piece until it's just a smidgen on your hand. I mean, I understand the process, of course, but I thought that in physics, they said you will never, because everything is infinite in a way, you'll never be able to find the God molecule or the smallest part, because even that small part can be broken down. We just can't see it or work with it. So yeah. Explain a little bit about that. Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, really, this is going into the four tenets. So we have the four schools, and each school has a slightly different view of the way things really are. And so in the Vaibhashika tradition, they assert that there is the smallest particle that exists. We have to have a smallest particle. There has to be something, that really exists. And on that something, we can build, we can have formation from that something. If there was not something, there would be nothing, and that would be nihilism. Whereas the Madhyamaka view, no. Even that smallest particle
can be broken down. So it's by school. Oh, I had no idea. Yes. Oh, thank you. Thank you. That's great. Thank you.
Bruno, would you like to come on?
Hello. Hello, Kunsan. Hello, everyone. This is my first course in Vajrayana Online and Otterga overall. So thank you for this. And you said the four foundations of mindfulness, they encompass our whole experience, right? So I was wondering if there are any direct correlations between the four foundations and the five aggregates, because we had the practice on the five aggregates in the first module. And so are there any kinds of direct correlations, like when I'm doing the practice on the mindfulness of the body, is it any useful to bring this up, like this is my body, earth, water, air, fire, and this is also the first aggregate of form? Can you clarify a little bit about this?
Yes, definitely. There are some pieces that totally, we've just basically got these different frameworks to look at our experience. And so the form in the four foundations of mindfulness and the form in the five aggregates are very, very similar. I think in the four foundations of mindfulness, you're really looking at inner form and outer form, the inner experience as well as the outer experience. And in the five aggregates, I don't think we really do that so much. I think we're really just looking at the form aggregate of the body, the elements. But yes, we have these different formats, different structures, different frameworks of breaking down our experience. I'm sure Edwin could add more to that. Does anybody here know much about the correlation between these two, or be able to expand on the correlation between these two? No. Yeah, I think we'll come back to that. It's a great question, Bruno, and I can definitely see, particularly for the form, that these two can be applied in both ways. Yeah. Sorry, I can't say much more than that.
Thank you, Quinson.
Yeah. Barbara, would you like to come on?
Thank you, Kunzang. I found your explanation of tone, feeling tone, so very helpful. What I notice about that is that, and this may have to do with having worked in mental health, is I have a very strong response of I should be able to manage emotional tone, and that I'm aware, as you were talking about it, that's bound to add to suffering, grasping that way. And so noticing that, I can see, is really important. Beyond noticing it, do you have any ideas about how to work with softening that? Because it's clearly not true that I can manipulate all that.
I mean, one of the things I really love about these explorations is we can see how subjective they are, or how is that the right way of putting it? It's like it's not mine. It's not I. Like we're breaking down all of the different aspects of our experience in a very logical way. You know, it's like when we, and I'm sure you'll have experienced this, maybe even through looking through the five skandhas, you start to see, and Edwin's spoken quite a bit about this, I've heard him say, everything is just happening, you know, without us being in the mix, they're just happening. And so I find it very, very helpful to have this new fresh lens, this new fresh perspective on seeing all of the different pieces of our experience. And in that way, it feels like we're kind of relinquishing this idea of being in control of what's going on. It's more like donning the scientific hat and kind of going into the laboratory of our body and our mind and just seeing and teasing it all apart, you know? So I would just maybe suggest approach this with this real lens of appreciation of the Abhidharma, which means that we're starting to see all of the details that we didn't really see before. And I think this is really where the benefit of having done the Mahamudra practices or joy of living practices, where we have this big wide view that it's all encompassing. You know, the flowers that are blossoming on the tree. And now we're going right down to the minutiae, right down to the roots, and seeing really what is it that's going on from the roots. It's a very different exploration, very, very different, different energy to it, different feeling to it. So I think just approaching it in that way, we can sort of relinquish the idea that we should be somewhere or we should know something. It's like we're doing this because we don't. We know that we don't, you know. That's why we're lifting up the hub, the bonnet, looking in. You know, that's the intention behind it. We've not looked there before. Even with maybe with the psychology, I don't know if you heard the interview with Beth Jacobs, and she was saying, yeah, I mean, as a have you got her book? Have you purchased her book? I'd highly recommend it, especially with the background in that field. She talks about how as a therapist, just the Abhidharma goes so much deeper. So much deeper and broader. Not to say that one is better than the other, but it's a very different exploration.
Thank you so much.
Charles, I think you might be the last one. Are we up on the hour?
Yes, just a clarification, very short, about your discussion with Ricardo at a certain moment. Ricardo say that one thought brings another.
Sorry, I see that my mic was not. It's about your discussion with Ricardo. At a certain moment, he say that one thought produces another thought. But in my understanding, the continuity is not at the level of the thoughts, but at the level of the consciousness. Can you clarify if it's one or the other or both?
Yeah, I said one mind moment leads to another mind moment, not thought. I didn't intend to.
No. I think it's Ricardo said that, but maybe I didn't grasp that you say one mind moment leads to one mind moment. That it was my understanding too.
Yeah, moment of consciousness. The previous moment of consciousness leads to the next moment of consciousness. Mm-hmm. Let me just see if I can find a better expression of that.
Maybe can you, to make it clear, can you make it to distinguish with what is a mind moment of consciousness compare in relationship to a thought?
Well, thoughts arise within mental consciousness. So we have the five sense consciousnesses and the sixth mental consciousness. And so it's within the mental consciousness that we experience thoughts. So the continuum of mental consciousness never stops. And so sense consciousnesses come and go again and again, but our actual consciousness, according to the Abhidharma, never ceases. It's from the previous moment comes the next moment, and like that, it continues on. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, thank you. And I have other questions, but it's too late, not today. Maybe next time.
You could pop them in the chat as well. Do type them in the forum. Edwin is great at these kind of questions, and I quite enjoy digging into them too. It's 9 o'clock at night for me now, so my mind isn't as fresh as it could be in the morning. But please type them in the chat, and we'll come to them, or you can ask it next time live. Yeah, wonderful. Well, thank you very much for a rich session, everyone. And I look forward to hearing from you. We've got something coming up on Saturday. We've got an interview with, what's his name? I'm going to forget now. I shouldn't have mentioned it. Judson Brewer, thank you. Yes, I've just found it. So there's an interview with Cord and Judson Brewer, which I think will be quite exciting. Looking forward to that on Saturday night, I believe. Yes, 12th of October. Yeah. Wonderful. So have a wonderful morning, afternoon, evening, wherever you are. And to be continued. Take care, everyone.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Kunsan.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Kunsan.
Thanks, Kunsan.
Thank you.
Thanks, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.